Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Nun Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a Mark the Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Mark the Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur in the middle of the Omid. You'll see a Mishnah, 22 lines from the top of the page. On the side, under the Nosei Mivneh heading, a Nosei, a topic, and Mivneh, structural note, you'll see that we've dashed underlined in the Mishnah, and we've noted Gimel Dugmois. There are three examples. Shel Loi Kosav Lo Dvorim Horigilim Lofia Beksuba. If the husband did not write into the Ksuba document three different things that regularly appear in the document, what happens? And a second point, Nishbeis Oi Loksa. If, let us say, the wife was taken captive or took ill, Haim habal yochol legarsha v'loseis lo ksuba v'hi tetapel batzma. Can a husband divorce her and pay her the ksuba? The ksuba is due to any woman that a husband divorces, and then she will take care of herself. In other words, she'll redeem herself, or she'll take care of her medical bills. Now the Mishnah. Lo yikosav lo ksuba. A man marries a woman and doesn't write the ksuba document. Besula geva mosayim valmona mona. A virgin marriage, she will be entitled to receive 200 zuz upon either her divorce or becoming a widow. And a almona, this is a woman who had been married before, and it's now her second marriage, mona. She will receive 100 from the second husband. Mipnei shehu tnai basin. They receive these amounts respectively, even though they're not written into the document, because that is a built-in condition. We'll call it a court condition that upon which marriages are predicated. So that even without it being written, it's understood that that is owed to the women. Kosav lo sode shovim mona tachas mosayim zuz. A man writes over to his wife that she will get a particular field instead of a field that's worth 100 mona. Correction. A field that's worth 100 zuz, mona is 100 zuz, and it is in lieu of the 200 zuz that she owes, she deserves. V'lo kosav lo, and he doesn't add the following clause, kol nechosim de'isli achroim leksubosech, that all the property that I have is stands as a guarantee to compensate you for your ksuba. Chayof, he's obligated anyway. Shehu tnai beisdin. In other words, the man essentially defined a field worth 100 zuz when she has 200 zuz coming to her, and he has other properties. She ultimately will have a right to collect the balance from his other properties, even if he didn't specifically or explicitly write in that my other properties are bound to the ksuba debt that is owed to you. And once again, this is a tenai beisdin. It's a built-in court condition that one's properties are bound, or if you say, you can say she has a lien upon his properties toward the value of her ksuba. Lo kosavlo im tishtaboy afrikinoch vosvinoch li into. If he doesn't write this clause, that if taken captive, I will redeem you and return you unto me as a wife. Uve kohenis, if he happens to be a kohen married to this woman, once a kohenis, once a woman married to a kohen is taken into captivity, she can no longer return to her husband because of the suspicion that she was, the strong suspicion that she was party to immorality under the control of the captors. And a wife of a kohen is not allowed, even if she's raped, is not allowed to continue living with her kohen husband. So in the case of a kohen marriage, the clause would read that if you are taken into captivity, I will redeem you, and ahadrinoch lemedintoch, and I will return you to your country. In other words, you'll go back home. Chayav, the husband is obligated, even if he doesn't indicate in writing that he obligates himself to redeem her. Shehu tenai beisdin. This too is a guarantee, a condition upon which marriages are predicated, so he's obligated even without it being formally written in. Nishbeis, chayav livdosa, a woman who is taken, the wife of a man who's taken into captivity, the husband, chayav livdosa, he is obligated to redeem her. V'im omar, if he should declare, hare gita uksubosa v'tivdeas atzma, I behold am divorcing her, and there is the ksuba debt that I owe her, let her collect that and redeem herself. Eino rashoi, a person, a husband is not allowed to do that. Very simply because beforehand he was initially obligated to redeem her by the very fact that they were married, the obligation to redeem her, we'll say the financial aspect, the debt that he owes to paying the ransom, set in before his, let's say, his decision to divorce her. So he can't circumvent that financial obligation to redeem her. So he can't offer this alternative. Luxa, his wife took ill, and that arouses medical expenses. Chayav l'raposa, he has to pay for those bills. And halachically speaking, the refuah, Rashi adds very importantly, is considered like mizonos. It's like considered the daily obligation of a husband to feed his wife. Omar, now upon her taking ill, he says, Hare gita uksubasa terapes atzma. I want to divorce her, I'll pay her ksuba, and with that money, let her tend to her own medical bills. Rashoi, he is allowed to do that. Very simply because you're dealing with a woman who is currently in receiving mizonos, like any regular wife receives mizonos. In this case, the mizonos appears in the form of pills and medical treatments. That's all under the rubric of mizonos. And just like any husband has a right to divorce his wife, even though up till that point he was feeding her on a daily basis, he decides to, one day a husband decides to divorce his wife, he can do that. Likewise over here, he divorces his wife and he's not obligated to support his divorced wife. So in this case, in contrast to the case just before with the Nishbeis, in this case he is allowed to divorce her and tell her to pay for her own expenses from the ksuba. Of course, I'm sure that this might sound very callous and an unfortunate situation and whatever, but we have to, we're not here to make social statements, but rather we're here to analyze the letter of the law. Beyond that, of course, one has to consider other aspects in each one's personal behavior, but as far as the general letter of the law is concerned, the Mishnah states the two examples and their contrasting rulings. The Gemara asks Moni, who is the author of our Mishnah? On the side, we have a nosei, a topic heading, the Sheila Mi Tana de Masnisen. Who is the Tana of the Mishnah? You'll note that we have a very long question marking, taking it down about a quarter of the way down Omid Beis. All of this is part of a long question. Diamonds that appear highlight under, you can see under the Mivneh heading, Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yehuda. Lefi Kushyas HaGemara, according to the question that the Gemara presents, Mashma Dereisha Aliba Derebbe Meir V'Seifa K'Rebbe Yehuda, that the first part of the Mishnah, case one that's encircled in the Mishnah, would reflect Rebbe Meir, and the Seifa, the continuation of the Mishnah, case two of the Mishnah, reflects Rebbe Yehuda. And that is not a comfortable situation when you have an unnamed Mishnah, a Mishnah without any names appearing, then to come along and suggest that it's authored by two different Tanoim is not a comfortable position to be in. So that constitutes our long question. Now the Gemara, Moni. Our Mishnah that said, even if he doesn't write the Achrayus is that guarantee that a husband must provide to a wife to cover her ksuba, the guarantee that all his properties stand as a guarantee. She has a lien, we'll say, upon all his properties. It's called achrayus. Even if he doesn't write it in, it is understood to be there. That idea is Rebbe Meir Hi. D'yomar. Let's backtrack for 1 second, please. Correction. We must make a correction. Our Mishnah said that even if he doesn't write the amount that is due to her, the Besula Masayim and the Amona Mona, she gets it anyway. That aspect, later on we'll get to the issue of the guarantee. But in the meantime, the aspect of the Mishnah that says that even if he didn't write in the 100 and the 200 for the different kinds of women respectively, she gets it, that is Rebbe Meir's opinion. That under all circumstances, she deserves the entire sum. The Omar, Rebbe Meir says, Kol apoiches lebesula mimasayim, any husband who provides less than 200 for a besula, ul almona mona, less than a 100 for the almona, hare zubi laznus, it would be tantamount to an intimacy of harlotry. De'i Rebbe Yehuda, if that section of the Mishnah was in accordance with Rebbe Yehuda, there is a possibility of reduction. Ha'omar, Rebbe Yehuda has been known to say, Rotzo keise v'besula shtar shel masayim, a husband can write to the virgin wife a shtar, a document of 200. In other words, a ksuba of 200 zuz. V'hi keiseves, and she would write in response, hiskabalti mimcho mona, a receipt. Even if she didn't actually receive any payment, she can write such a receipt. And in the final analysis, you have a woman that will be receiving 100, even though she's a basula. Likewise, ul almona mona, person can write to his widow wife, the wife that he married as a widow, 100. V'hi koisevis, and she writes to him, hiskabalti mimcho chamishim, I've received from you 50 of the 100. So as far as Rebbe Yehuda is concerned, the opening of the Mishnah would not be appropriate, because according to the opening of the Mishnah, the Besu will always get 200. In other words, the husband cannot give less than that. According to Rebbe Yehuda, there is an option for him to end up giving less. Eimo Seifa. Now we turn to the part we mistakenly mentioned earlier, the Seifa, the section 2 of the Mishnah. The Sefer literally means the end, but it means the in the progression of the Mishnah. The following appeared: Kosav lo sada shavim on etachas mosayim zuz. The husband assigned toward her ksuba a field worth 100 instead of 200. Velo kosav lo kol nechosim di isli achroyim leksuba zech. And he leaves out. He doesn't have written in this phrase the guarantee clause. That all of my property is bound toward your ksuba. And the thinking right now means when he says all of my property is bound toward your ksuba, that means even if after their marriage he, the husband, were to sell properties, she, having been married before those sales, would be able to go to those who purchased land from him and collect that land. She has, in effect, a lien on the property. That's the thinking right now. That all of his property is bound toward her ksuba, empowering her to collect even from purchasers. Purchasers, of course, subsequent to their wedding date. Chayov, the clause is understood anyway, even if it's not written. In Shutnai Bezdin, it's a court condition upon which marriages are predicated. Well, this section of the Mishnah, Asan Rabbi Yehuda, is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda's approach. The Omar, Rabbi Yehuda is known to say, to hold achrayas toi sofer, who? The absence of the guarantee clause is automatically assumed to be a mere oversight or a mistake on the part of the scribe, and otherwise it really belongs there. Even if it's not written in, the woman will be entitled to collect from what's called Mishubadim. Those are the purchasers, that's the example of the lien she has upon all of the husband's properties from the point that they marry onwards. The Rebbe Meir, if the Mishnah were authored by Rebbe Meir, if this section were authored by Rebbe Meir, Rebbe Meir says that the absence of the Achrayas clause is not an indication of a mistake, an oversight on the part of the scribe, but it's deliberate. Disnan, and here we provide the background for that information in this Tanaic source, which continues, you can see down the first five lines of Amud Beis, and at the end of the source, the question is repeated, where the Gemara says, Reisha Rabbi Meir v'Sefer Rabbi Yehuda, should we say that? And in the meantime, let's see this source in which the issue of Achrayas Toi Sofer, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, by the way, appears in this source under the name Chachomim. So the source says, Motzo Shtar Rechov, a person finds on the street, he finds some Shtar Rechov, those are documents indicating debt, someone borrowed money. It's called loan documents, which in the hands of the creditor enables him to collect money from the borrower. When you find a shtar chov, there's always the possibility that maybe the shtar was paid up, and if you give it to the malve, he'll be collecting a second time. On the other hand, if it really was paid up, it should have been torn up, not left intact. Anyway, you find these loan documents on the street. We continue at the top of Amud Beis. Im yesh bohen achrayas nechosim, if the guarantee clause is written into the document you found, lo yachzir, don't give it back. Don't give it back to the malve. Based in the Freimehen, that kind of document in the hands of the Malva will be such that he will be able to collect with it. And it could very well be that the loan was paid up already. And Rashi adds, even if the Lova admits that he is still bound, don't give it back because it could be part of a type of scheme that's worked out between the Malva and the Lova. So just don't give it back. Ein bohen achrayas nechosim, if the loan document does not have a guarantee clause in it. Now, in the absence of the guarantee clause, so any subsequent purchasers, people who purchased the properties from this borrower after the date in which he took the loan out, they will not be subject to collection. And therefore, we say yachsir, that you can return to the malveh. If the loveh had paid up, so then he should have torn it up. The fact that the shtar is still intact indicates to us that it hasn't been paid up yet. And the main thing for us right now is that any purchasers are not put up at risk here, are not endangered by having the shtar given back to the creditor. And that's what the Mishnah means. This source means that she'ain bezdin ifroim, and bezdin is not going to collect on the malva's behalf from any purchasers. Divrei Rebbe Meir. So Rebbe Meir makes a clear distinction between a document in which the guarantee clause appears. And when we say guarantee clause, that means, as we said, anyone who purchased property from this borrower after the date of the loan, they are at risk. If there's no guarantee clause in there, so then they're not at risk. And we're not endangering any like innocent third parties by giving the shtar back to the malveh. V'chachomim oimrim. Rashi explains that the term chachomim alludes to Rabbi Yehuda and others that go along with him. The chachomim say, echod zeh ve'echod zeh lo yachsir. Even if it's a shtar that doesn't have achrayas nechosim written in it, doesn't have the guarantee clause, do not give it back to the malvet. She'beizdin nifroimehen. Beizdin will collect from Meshubodim, from purchasers, if need be. What is the rationale? The rationale is that even though the clause is absent, it's assumed to have been a mere oversight on the part of the sofer, achrayas toi sofer, the mistake of the scribe. So now our Mishnah comes out, Reisha Rebbe Meir. The ratio said that the woman is guaranteed at all times the minimum basic amount, the 200 for the basula, the 100 for the almona, and she cannot receive less than that. And that's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. And the second section of the Mishnah that spoke about a ksuba without the guarantee clause in it is nevertheless understood to have that clause in it. That seems to be like Rabbi Yehuda. And as we said, we don't want to have a Mishnah that has split authorship. The Chitema, you might want to say, or if you try to say Kula Rebbe Meir he, that the whole Mishnah is authored by Rebbe Meir. Vishani, and then what would need explanation? The issue of the guarantee clause. Vishani Leila Rebbe Meir ben Ksuba Lishtari, and that Rebbe Meir makes a distinction between a marriage document and other financial documents, whereby in a ksuba he will agree that even if the achrayas is not written in, the woman is entitled to collect from the purchasers who purchase property from the husband after their marriage. Umishonile, would Rebbe Meir make such a distinction? Does he make such a distinction? Not so. V'hotanya. We have a Tanaic source, and in this source there's quite a bit of information, but in the context of our Gemara markings, Daf Yomisha, we're only going to emphasize that which is necessary for our sugya right now, and that you can see is highlighted by the markings, by the special underlining. Chamisha goyven min hamechuroren. There are five examples of people that collect from mechur. Mechur means from the word ben chorin. Chorin is free properties. Free properties means properties that the individual in debt is currently holding on, not properties that he has already sold. So there are five examples whereby you cannot collect from properties that the one who is in debt that had already sold. You can only collect from properties that he's currently holding on, that he's in possession of. And these five examples include number five in this list, Ksubas Isha, She'ein Bo Achrayas, a Ksuba that doesn't have the Achrayas clause, the guarantee clause written in. Well, in the absence of the guarantee clause, that indicates that she has no lien on any purchasers that purchased. That indicates that the absence of the guarantee clause is no mistake, it's deliberate. And the right after the source, you see the Gemara says, "Man shamis le dom achrayas lato sofer." Who is it that is known to say that the absence of the guarantee clause is not a mere oversight, a mere mistake, but it's deliberate? It's Rabbi Meir holds that vekotoni ksubas isha. Ksubas isha is amongst those examples that we find cannot collect from the Meshubadim because the guarantee clause is missing. So that they, as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, no distinction is made between a ksuba and other shtaros. So the question will remain at that point. Our Mishnah seems to be authored on the one hand by Rabbi Meir and on the other hand by Rabbi Yehuda. How can that be? So let's read the entire source. Again, we're not going to dwell on the other examples. Chamisha goyvin min ha-mechuroren, v'yelohen, peros, u'shvach peros, v'makabil olov lozun es ben ishto u'bas ishto, u'veget choiv she'ein bo achrayis. Get chov, by the way, this is worth noting as well. The get chov is a standard loan document. Rashi says, kol shtoros nikroin get. So that it's important for us to note that four is taught along with five. Get chov shein bo achrayis and ksubas isha shein bo achrayis. These are two examples of documents whereby the guarantee clause is missing, and as a result of that, the party in question cannot collect from the Mishubadim. He cannot collect from purchasers. That shows us that the absence of that clause was deliberate, and it's not just an oversight or a mistake, and it's understood as if it's there. So here we have a source in which get chov number four and number five. Get chov again is a regular shtar chov, and ksubas isha are taught as having the same halacha. That's why we brought in this source to show that the shita, the opinion that holds achrayas is not toy sefer, does not make a distinction between a ksuba and other documents. And who is that shita? Man shames le diomar achrayas lav toy sefer. Who is it that's known to hold that the absence of the guarantee clause is not a mere mistake? Rabbi Meir. It's Rabbi Meir. Vikotoni ksubas isha. Together with get chov, he teaches it together with other types of financial documents. So at this point, we've got to figure out authorship of the Mishnah. The Gemara answers: E boyesema Rabbi Meir, ve boyesema Rabbi Yehuda. In fact, the Mishnah can be authored by either one of them, and all we have to do is straighten out the section of the Mishnah that didn't conform. If you like, you can say that the Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. And then what about the beginning of the Mishnah? Hasam, where Rabbi Yehuda spoke about the woman getting less, kasvale hiskabalti, she proactively wrote or indicated a receipt that I already received a part of the sum. So where the woman proactively indicates that she received part of the sum, so that's it. He doesn't have to pay the rest of it. But in the absence of the woman taking this initiative, Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees she has to get the entire sum. In our Mishnah, she didn't write any receipt to the husband. She didn't indicate proactively that she received some. Therefore, she is entitled to receive the entire amount. So that the beginning of the Mishnah can fit into Rabbi Yehuda just as well. And the second section with the Achrayas being viewed as Toy Sofer is also like that's straightforward Rabbi Yehuda. So the Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir. You can say that the Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Meir that Achrayas. Now, if you say that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Meir, did he not say that the absence of the Achrayas is deliberate? It's not a mistake. And yet, in our Mishnah, it said that if the Achrayas is not written in, the husband is nevertheless Chayev. Aha! But the word Chayev, we thought, meant the husband and all the properties he sold are bound toward her Ksuba. And that is not true. My Chayev the Katani, what does Chayev mean in the Mishnah? If you need to look for what's called a word in the haystack, there's a little star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara. You can go back to Omid Aleph and you'll see where the word appears. The husband had not written in that all of my property is bound toward your Ksuba Chayev. It doesn't mean Chayev, as we said, that she can then go to purchasers, to Lakuchais, but rather Chayev de Katani, the Chayev that is written in means Min Hamuchuroren. Means all the properties that he currently holds at the point that he divorces her, all of those properties are bound toward her Ksuba, but not that she can go to go collect from Lakuchas. Loi Kosav Lo Vechule. Before we continue, we glance at the side under the Nosei, the topic heading. Dino Shel Avua de Shmuel, the law taught by Avu de Shmuel, Eishes Yisrael Shenensa, a woman married to a Yisrael. And we're mentioning married to Israel, not married, we're not talking about a married to a Kohen, married even to a Yisrael. Shenensa, that's raped, Asur L'Bailo. Very surprising halacha. If she's raped, she can't go back to her husband, Chayshinon, because we suspect Shemot Techilosa Ba'ines V'Seifa Baratzon. We suspect that she, the initial contact with this, with the low life, with the rapist, was against her will. But as the incident progressed, she acquiesced. That's Soifa Baratzon. That at the end she was in agreement. She did it willingly, and a married woman who has willing extramarital relations thereby prohibits herself to go back to her husband. And as we said, this is a very very interesting halacha. It's quite surprising that the concept of a married woman who was raped is being prohibited not just to a Kohen husband, but even to all husbands. The obvious question will be raised in the Gemara. According to Avua de Shmuel, where then do you ever have a situation where the well-known halacha will apply? The well-known halacha that says a married woman that's raped is not prohibited to her husband outside of Kohanim. Where is that ever going to have any application if you're going to say what you do? That we're suspicious that maybe she acquiesced at the end. The marking that you see, the house marking, is featured under the Mivneh, highlighting Avu de Shmuel, the Rava Shecholkim Zalzeh. There's a machlokes between these opinions, and hence we highlighted their names accordingly. The Gemara. Omar Avu de Shmuel, Eishes Yisrael Shenansa, Asura Labailo, a wife of a Yisrael, and again, Yisrael means besides a Kohen, even a wife of a non-Kohen, that's raped, Asura L'Baila, she's forbidden to go back to her husband. Chayshinon, Shemot Chilosa Boines V'Soifa Baratzon. We're suspicious that maybe at the beginning it was under duress, it was against her will, but at the end she acquiesced, it was willing. She was willing. Esve Rav Le'avod Shmuel. Rav raises a challenge to Avod Shmuel from our Mishnah. It says in our Mishnah, Im Tishtaboi, if you are taken into captive, and when we speak about captivity, we're talking about Gentile captors and the very strong suspicion that there was rape, and the husband would indicate in the ksuba, if you're taken into captivity, Afrikinoch, I will redeem you, and I will dash the line, the main phrase, Vaisvinoch Lilinto, and I'll take you back as a wife. Well, so what do we see here? We see that a woman who's raped, a married woman who's raped, goes back to her husband. That's exactly the opposite of what Avod Shmuel said. Ishtik! And he had no answer. Now, by the way, we noted that Rav is the one that raised the question. And here you have a very, very interesting observation. Kori Rav, Olei Avod Shmuel, Rav referred to Avod Shmuel the following pasuk. We should emphasize that Rav, according to Rav, Avod Shmuel should have answered him. It's true that Rav raised the question, but it's a question that had an answer to it, and yet Avod Shmuel remained silent. So Rav refers to Avod Shmuel, Sorim Otsru B'milim V'Kaf Yosimu L'Fihem. The Sorim, the ministers, the important individuals, were withheld or were upheld through, by words, and they placed their hands over their mouths, meaning they remained silent. What could he have possibly said? It sounded like a very good question, that a married woman who's raped is allowed to go back to her husband. That's a strong question on Avod Shmuel. What could he have answered? The following. B'shivuya hekelu. Avod Shmuel could have answered that you're asking on my principle from a case of a woman taken into captivity. Within that realm of captive women, we are lenient, and very simply because it's all a matter of mere suspicion. We didn't see her actually in intimacy with the captors. Avod Shmuel's halacha applied to a case where it was known that the woman was raped. In the case of the woman taken into captivity, all we know is that she was taken into captivity. We don't know that anything actually happened. Therefore, under such circumstances, one can be lenient. The Gemara asks, Ulavu Shmuel, Oines Deshaya Rachmona, according to Avu Shmuel, the onus that the Torah allows, namely allows the the wife to go back to her husband, Hechi Mishkachasla, where does it ever manifest itself? Where do you find such a case? Answer, Kagon Dekoamri Edim. Witnesses that were witness to the rape could testify Shitsovcha Mitchila V'Yatsof, that the woman was screaming from beginning to end, you know, stop, stop, whatever, and with that behavior on her part, it's very clear that there was no element of acquiescence, of willingness on her part. And so if you have witnesses that can testify to that effect, that is the case that the married woman would be allowed to go back to her non-Kohen husband. By the way, if we're dealing with a husband that's a Kohen, she's forbidden anyway. That's a law of the Torah, that a wife of a Kohen who was raped is forbidden to go back to her Kohen husband. Upliga de Rava. What we've seen in the name of Avod Shmuel is at odds. Rava disagrees with that. The Amar Rava. What is Rava saying? Any case where the beginning of the contact is through ones is rape. The beginning of the contact with this rapist is through his forcing her, and as the incident progresses, there appears to be rotzon. Rotzon means willingness on her part. Even if she says Hanichulov, she says, if there are people around, she would say, leave him alone, let him do what he's doing, that if he wouldn't have come to me, I would have gone out and paid him to be with me. Muteris, she is allowed to go back to her husband. Mai taimo? Why? Is she not a married woman willingly engaging in intimacy with another man? So the Gemara says, because Yetzer al-Bashah. Rashi says, in the lower part of the narrow lines, Yetzer al-Bashah v'gam ze oines. This is also considered beyond her control. Shebetchilas be'ilah, sheba oines, at the beginning of the action, when it really was under duress, at that point, as the incident started, Hilbisha Aboyel Yetzer, the rapist, we'll say, planted within her this the evil inclination, or we'll call the Yetzer Hara, which is something that was, we'll say, certainly was not planned by the woman ahead of time. It wasn't premeditated, and hence the whole event is considered ones. Tanya Kavose de Rava. We have a Tanaic source supporting Rava, and we should point out, by way of markings, a series marking appears, triangles appear, and under the Mivne heading we indicate Gimel Droshes al Aposik Vehi Loi Nisposa. There are three sources that have a drosha opening with the pasuk that describes a married woman that is party to extramarital relations, and she was not grabbed, she was not raped. So vehi lo nisposa means, and if she wasn't raped, that's what the pasuk says, and then the result of that is, we know, asura, that she is forbidden to go back to her husband. And in these sources, in each one of these sources, there's going to be a phrase, you'll see a dashed underlining, yoitzim v'yoitzim min haklal. They are exceptions to the rule. So in the meantime, we have a source that supports Rava. The pasuk says, v'hi lo nisposa, if she was not raped, the result of that is asura. She is usur, a married woman was not raped, but and it was participant in extramarital relations, is usur, forbidden to go back to her husband. Ha nisposa, if she was raped, muteris, she's allowed to go back to her husband. V'yesh l'cha acheres, there is another kind of woman, another case, shafa pish nisposa asura, even if she was raped, she cannot go back to her husband. V'yezo, what is that? Zu Ashes Kohen. That's the case of the wife of a Kohen. So we have this source that says that the Ashes Yisrael that's raped is mutter to go back to her husband. And as far as Avuah d'Shmuel is concerned, he said that Ashes Yisrael that's raped is also to go back to her husband. So that this source supports Rava. We continue. Tanya Idach, another source, opening with the same pasuk. Vehi lo nisposa, if she was not raped, the result of that is asura, she's also to her husband. Ha nisposa, we can infer though. I must ask for you. I must apologize to all of the listeners. I made a serious error in the reading. So let us go back. Again, I seek your apologies. Let us go back to the fourth wide line. Tanya Kavosei Derava. The Braisa opens up with Vehi lo nisposa asura. Ha nisposa muteris. If she was raped, she's allowed to go back to her husband. V'yesh lo acheres. There's another example. Sha'afa pisha lo nisposa. Even if she wasn't raped, muteris, she's allowed to go back to her husband. V'yezozo. What do you mean? What is that? That a woman that's not raped? That's in other words, there's willingness. She's allowed to go back to her husband. What v'yezo? Which one is that? Zu kol shetchilasa ba'ines v'seifa baratzon. Any case that it began as a rape, even though at the end it was baratzon, It was with willingness on her part. As we described before under Rava, she is allowed to go back to her husband. And that's what we meant before when you have a Tanaic source supporting Rava. Here it's black and white. And now we continue in the Gemara. Tanya idach v'hi lo nisposa asura. If the woman, a married woman, was not raped and willingly experienced extramarital relations, asura, she can, that's forbidden to her husband. Oh, nisposa, if she was raped, muteris, she's allowed to go back to her husband. V'yesh l'cha acheres, there's another example of a woman, she'af api she'nisposa, even if she was raped, asura, she is forbidden to her husband. V'yeizo, and which one is that? Zu Eishes Kohen. That's the wife of a Kohen. Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Yishmuel. Here you have another drosha on the Hilo Nisbasa, but it's not in a Tanaic, it's not presented as a Tanaic source, even though it is brought by, in the name of Tanoim, but that's why you don't see a frame around this. It's said in the name of Rabbi Yishmuel, the Hilo Nisbasa Asura. If she was not raped, but rather was a willing partner, so she's also to go back to her husband. Ha nisposa muteris. If she would have been raped, she'd be allowed to go back to her husband. V'yesh locha cheres. There's another example. Shafal pi shelo nisposa muteris. That even if she was not raped, she's allowed, she's muteris. She, in other words, she is not going to be forbidden to her husband. Now we're going to have to explain that a little bit more in a moment as we, and when we go on. But we have a case of a woman that was not raped, and muteris, she does not, the fact that she was, let's say, a willing partner with this with, well, this extramarital relationship, it doesn't, it doesn't impose upon her a prohibition to the husband, to her husband. V'yezo, what's that case? Zu shekidusha kidushe tois. This is a case where the, where her marriage to her husband turned out to be a mistake. In other words, imagine the following. A man married a woman on conditions, specified conditions. And let's say the conditions, in order to determine whether the conditions we met or not, it would take 2 years to see whether or not those conditions would be met or not. After a year of marriage, she has she has an affair with another man. And eventually when the 2 year mark comes, the original conditions of her marriage to her husband were not met. Oh, so if the entire marriage, which was predicated on some type of tenai, on some kind of condition, and the condition was not met, so then she is retroactively considered never having been married to her husband. In the interim period, as we described, she happened to have an affair with another man. If at some point she wants to, after that affair, she wants to go back to her husband and marry him, she'd be allowed to. It's not considered a case of a married woman having had an affair with another man, which prevents her permanently from ever going back to her husband. Because in this case, the original marriage, as we said, was a mistake. The conditions were never fulfilled. And the Gemara goes on to describe how far we go with this idea. Shafilu bina murkav al ksefa, even if she has a child from the original husband, and we realize now that the conditions of their original marriage were never met, she says, I don't want to stay with you, and walks off without even the need for a get. A get, a divorce document, is only to undo an actual marriage, a binding marriage. But here there was no actual marriage, as we discovered retroactively. Omar Rav Yehuda, Hani Noshi, de Ganvu Ganvi, women that are kidnapped by thieves. Sharyon leguvrayu. They are allowed to go back to their husbands. Because if there was any illicit behavior, you can rest assured it was forced upon the women. It was ones. It was the equivalent of a rape. Amri le Rabbonon le Rav Yehuda. The Rabbonon asked Rav Yehuda, V'ha ka mamtion luhu nama. But we know that when these thieves kidnap the women and they take them from place to place, the women captives, they serve their captors with bread. Mamtion means they bring to them nama, bread. So it seems that they're getting on all right with them, that they're willing partners. No. Machmas yira. That behavior is only a function of their fear, that if they don't cooperate, they will pay heavily. Ah, but v'ha ka mishalchen lo giri. We know that when these bandits that kidnap the women are in battle with others, these women captives prepare arrows for them. They hand them their arrows for shooting. So you see cooperation between the women captives and the captors. No, that's also machmas yira. It's only out of a sense of fear. So when the women are eventually released, they can go back to their husbands. Vadai, however, if the following situation arises, shavkino v'azlon minafshayu, if the women are released, if the bandits release the women, they go home now, and they go right back to these ganovim, to these bandits on their own, minafshayu means on their own, well, then asiron. Then that shows us that they were in fact willing partners, and they are forbidden to their husbands. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, we have some markings that we want to pay attention to, and on the side under the Nosei, Mivneh heading, a diamond appears, Yishuv Stira Bein Shtei Brisos Binyan Heter Noshim Lebalein. We're going to present two Tanaic sources. One appears in the frame, the second, after the second diamond, you see the word Ibcha. That means the opposite. In other words, you have to imagine a Tanaic source like the first one, but just taught in the opposite fashion. So you have two Tanaic sources that seem to be contradictory. Now we turn to the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. Shivuye Malchus. It's an expression. We're not going to translate it immediately. We just say, you just read it as Shivuye means captive women taken by the king, the government. Hare hein kishivuyin. They have the status of captive women. These are women that were taken captive for intimacy purposes, and they have the status of shivuyin. They're allowed to go back to their husbands. Ginuve listus. Listus is a term referring to bandits, women that were kidnapped by bandits. They are not einon kishvuyin. They don't have the din of shvuyin, of captive women, and the result of that is that they are prohibited to go back to their husbands. V'ha tanya, but have we not learned ibcha, the opposite, which then says that the shvuyin malchus, those women are asuros to their husbands, and the ginuve listus women are mutoros to their husbands. The Gemara answers, malchus amalchus lo kashya. There is no contradiction per se. Ha b'malchus achashverosh, ha b'malchus ben netzer. Malchus achashverosh is representative of an imperial ruler, a king of a massive kingdom. Women that are taken captive for tashmish, for sexual purposes, by a king like that, any given woman knows that this great, this massive king isn't going to marry them, isn't going to keep them, and therefore the whole contact between this high-level imperial figure and the woman is just a mere act of rape. It's a mere act of onus. She can't resist. He's a king. He's got the court executioners at his beck and call. So that intimacy is an intimacy of onus, of rape. However, if it's Malchus ben Netzer, if we take a look at Rashi in the wide lines, almost halfway down the wide lines under the Gemara, ben Netzer, listim hoya, he's a bandit. The Lokar Ayoros, he wasn't a small-time petty thief. He captured cities, umolach aleihem, and he controlled them. He ruled over different cities. Venase roish listim, and he became known as the head of the mob. Ubadidei tnan, regarding him, we are taught that shvuyei malchus einan kishvuyei basuros lebaleihen. These kind of women that are captured by the likes of a ben Netzer, he's not a major imperial ruler. He's a local. Again, he's not a petty thief, but he's a local or regional criminal. They are asus abayan de savra. She figures though any a woman captured by this kind of character figures minsiv konosiv law. That he's actually interested in marrying me, Venivelis Baratson, and she'll be maybe she's impressed with that. She wants to cooperate, make a good impression, because she feels that he'll actually marry her. So there we suspect the element of Ratzon on her part, a willing intimacy, and that will prohibit this married woman from going back to her husband. So the two sources are not contradictory. In the first source, it says Shvuyei Malchus, the women are allowed to go back to their husbands. That's when the Malchus is a major imperial dynasty, and the king himself had relations with the woman. The woman isn't going to be a willing partner with the hopes of her being married by the guy's got millions of women at his beck and call. The second source that says the Shvuyei Malchus or Asuros, that's because you're dealing with this smaller time local or regional thug that the woman has hopes of or considers that he would marry her. Listus alistus lokashi, the two sources seem to be in conflict with one another regarding a woman taken captive by bandits. Ha beven netzer, ha belistim ba'alma. Ben Netzer, you see the name appears again in the source that indicated that she's asura in the case of Genuvei Listus. That would be in the first source where Genuvei Listus appeared and she's considered asuros. That's because the bandit is a bandit like Ben Netzer, a regional thug, and the source that indicated that the Genuvei Listus, she's Muteris, the Ipcha source, that's a petty thief. That's Listim d'Alma. In the case of Listim d'Alma, she's repulsed by him. He's disgusting in her eyes. Say in contrast with the Ben Netzer case, he's a man of standing, if you will, even though it's in the negative light. Nevertheless, she, as Rashi indicates, she'll feel, I'm an Ashes Melech, I'm the wife of the king of the mob. So it's a certain standing that she has. It would encourage her to want to be with him. But a low life petty thief, he's disgusting in her eyes. So any contact between any illicit intimacy with him is still viewed as an act of rape. No willingness on her part. The Gemara asks, in the course of resolving these sources, when you focus on Ben Netzer, in one place he's called a Malchus, in another place he's called a Listus, a thief. Malchus is a king, in another place called a thief. So the Gemara asks, Ben Netzer, Hossam Kori Le Melech, in source Beis, he's called a Melech, and The Hacha in source Aleph, Korilei Listim, he's called a bandit. In, Gemara says, yeah, when it's not that we're seeing double over here, that's correct. It's all a matter of relativity. Gabi Achashverosh, when taught in the context of an imperial ruler like Achashverosh, so Ben Netzer is small time, Listim, who he's called a bandit. Gabi Listim Damo, but in contrast to a petty thief, Ben Netzer Melechu, he is like a king. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.